We're beginning the tech net. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. My name is Dick. This will be tech net number 1551 of the series that began way back in September of 1982, 32 years ago. The tech net represents a gathering of the clan, the guys who are curious about how radio works, and they want to know how it works better. And there's two places where you can listen to past information about the TechNet. One of them is amateurradio.tangovictor, where the last 7 years of TechNet are all recorded, something like a few thousand hours worth. In fact, people use that website because they can't stay up late enough. This TechNet runs from 8 until midnight, and some people can't stay up that late. But a couple days after Sunday in the week, the most current TechNet 4 hours of the recording will appear at that website. Let me drop it. In which case, they can download it to their audio device and play it back as they're on their commute to work or on their lunch hours and so on. So, thousands of hours worth of TechNet are available there. Another good website where additional information is available is LimeOnTechNet.com. And so, mic number one and mic number two run those two websites. The most damaging sounding complaint that we sometimes get of the TechNet is that, hey, you guys are repeating hardware, repeating subjects. And when you've got 6,000 hours worth of TechNets that have taken place over the last 32 years, to say that there's a repeat is a given. However, you take a subject like a voltage standing wave ratio, and yes, that subject comes up in some form or not every other TechNet, because there's always somebody new setting up an antenna, or there's always a different way of approaching this rather complicated subject. The subject matter itself, the tidal standing wave ratio, gets repeated, but the exact material and the way to approach it and the new way of understanding what's going on, that changes. Now, changing subjects, we're going to have The Mailbag by John, KC2WGB, and I've gotten a little bit of a hint of some of these darn good questions these newer hams or future scientists are asking him. Let me drop it. We'll be hearing some of those questions tonight. For the first hour, we take general questions and answers of subjects of interest to ham radio. The next sometimes hour is John, KC2WGB, telling us what Mailbag is. Subjects and questions he received. That's followed by Paul, WS2N, who tells us the latest of what the National Aeronautics and Space Administration has been doing. And they're into some very exciting things. And after that, if there's any time left over, we discuss other subjects. However, we try to discuss other subjects still of general interest to ham radio operators. I mean, if the particular subject you want to discuss happens to be something that's interesting to only one human being, should we take up a whole lot of TechNet time with that one subject? Is a question that's not easy to answer, and obvious by the response we get from the listeners from time to time, we get a hint as to what kinds of subjects people will tolerate, so to speak. This is a public repeater. It's loaned to us. Let me drop it. It's loaned to us, so to speak, by the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club. And we have to keep that leadership happy. If we did things that make that leadership unhappy, we might lose this resource. So we have to treat it with respect. A person signs into the technical net because he does have a question or a comment by giving that staff of people, John, Paul, Dick, and also Hal, K6DP said, you give that staff of people your call letters, your name, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. You need not sign in because you're just listening. After 32 years and 6,000 hours of TechNet, we believe somebody is listening. Apparently, we please more people than we displease. But you can't please everybody. There's always going to be somebody that's a little bit unhappy. They wish it was run some other way. And you're allowed to make suggestions. I mean, the menu that we follow now, let me drop.
Dick?
Yes, go right ahead, Eric.
All right, I'm at the repeater site. There's some things that I gotta do. So, to merely carry along, and if it doesn't come back, you know why.
Roger, Dodger. So what Eric is telling us is he's making changes to the repeater system, and periodically we may have some dead tan. Doesn't mean that we've walked away and that has ended. There's going to be an interruption, so we've been forewarned, and now we're to be forewarned is to be forearmed. You know what I mean? The check-ins. The menu that we follow now is something that slowly evolved over those 32 years. And if you've got suggestions as to a better menu, of course, make those suggestions to the group of four guys that we've just seriously mentioned, previously mentioned, and we'll consider your proposal. So I'm going to take check-ins right now. Give me a call or a name if you do have a question or a comment. Keep your eyes up, you're listening.
At 2APG, Dave, and yes.
H-Y-Y, Joe, yes.
Okay, we certainly got Dave and Joe. Some rather frequent sign-ins with some darn good questions. Anyone else with a question or a comment who wants to sign in, give me a call with his name right now.
And to Xian, I don't know, if you want to take these questions, I have sent you a number of emails. It's related to space report antenna viewer and transmitters in space, and I believe Dr. Roy would be participating, and probably John and Glenn. After space report, if you have a time. Did you have a chance to read those questions?
I have not seen my email in the last 2 or 3 days. I'm sorry to say, Wes. Roy is AC2GS, and I think he's saying he's going to be representing a particular question. I'm looking forward to that. Anyone else to check in with a question or comment? Give me a call. It is right now. K2LAW. Okay, maybe we're going to have a light night tonight. Light night. There's a pun there somewhere. You'd be amazed how many times, though, we think we have very few check-ins. We get rolling on a subject. All of a sudden, a couple more people chime in and say, hey, I know something about that subject. And so it sounds like a late night sometimes develops into something that goes on for a long time. We've had a couple of technets that almost went on all night long, almost to sunrise the next morning. As such, I have requested that Eric put a timer on the machine so that it gets turned off, a hard turn off at midnight. We have to have a limit somewhere because some people got to go to work the next day, and some of these people just can't do without the material. They're afraid they're going to miss something. Or back in the days when I was working every day, I'd have to go to work the next morning with one eye so bloodshot because I was staying up so late. So, into APG. Dave, what's newest in Massapequa? And with all those great little radios you've been experimenting with, what's the latest in your neighborhood? You got it, Dave. Into APG, K2LAW.
All right, Dick, good evening to you and everybody on the net and to APG. My question has to do with those new radios, and specifically with the lithium-ion rechargeable batteries that they come with. I have many, many years of experience using NiCads and nickel metal hydrides, and I have a pretty good feel for how they work and how long they last and their characteristics and things like that. But when it comes to these lithium-ion batteries that are on the Baofengs and stuff like that, I'm a little light as far as experience with them. And I'd really like to hear from somebody that has street-level experience with these type of batteries on handy talkies, maybe somebody that maintains a fleet or, you know, is in the process of does service on these, just to get the lowdown on these lithium-ion batteries. What can we expect out of them? Things like that. Dick, go ahead.
Now, before we proceed, Dave, the nature of your question suggests that the lithium-ion batteries on Baofengs and Luxons and other radios these days have given you some grief or characteristics you weren't so happy with. Tell me what you've experienced so far that's making you start asking the question. I mean, if the lithium-ion battery gave you a life of 3 days, easy to recharge, and would take 1,000 charges and recharges, I mean, if the lithium-ion battery that you've experienced was that ideal, you wouldn't be asking this question. So what have you experienced so far that's less than ideal, either of hearsay or you've personally experienced? What do you know about that people have experienced so far that's less than ideal? That's a good place to begin. And to APG, K2LIW.
Well, no, Dick, I haven't experienced any negative aspects of these batteries. I really haven't been dealing with them personally for very long. But what I would like to know is, again, from somebody that has experience with these batteries for, a number of years, what their opinion is about them, how they work, what type of life expectancy you get out of them, what type of charge, recharge, cycles are best. Is there a way to rejuvenate an old lithium-ion batteries? Things like that. That's basically where I'm coming from. Go ahead.
John, good question and set of information there, Dave. And the whole reason lithium-ion batteries are now appearing in cell phones, handy talkies, and electrically powered radio-controlled model airplanes is because they have by far much higher energy density. And you can rate that in watts per pound, watt hours per pound, watt hours per cubic inch, cubic centimeter. I mean, no matter how you look at it, lots of energy inside of those lithium-ion batteries. And lithium-ion batteries, particularly the rechargeable ones, did have a very rocky beginning. They were a military product, I'm guessing 10 or so years ago, in which all of a sudden people were hearing examples of explosions and fires and things like that. If a lithium-ion battery goes into a leakage mode, a package leakage mode while it's being charged, and you take, for instance, these handheld devices like RFID, radio frequency identification tag readers, and many of those are using lithium-ion batteries. I was working in a factory. Let me drop. Where those particular lithium-ion batteries were, I'm guessing about 2 inches long, inch high, inch and a half wide, a cube of lithium-ion battery with four or five times the energy that most of us have in our little Roxons and Baofengs. And they had a whole wafer of those being charged. And the individual lithium-ion batteries that were being used by this company, Simple Technology, every one of those batteries had a built-in protection circuit stopping you from overcharging it, charging it too fast, over-discharging it. That protection circuit would protect you from a whole lot of grief that could occur from the outside. A lithium-ion battery that is overcharged too fast can generate a lot of heat. If it starts outgassing, gives off some rather noxious fumes. One of those batteries on that wall charger, where about 15 batteries were being charged simultaneously, went into some form of failure mode, leakage mode, whether or not the protection circuit had failed, which is a very rare event for them. Not quite sure what the real analysis and final conclusion was, but one of them started leaking, and you've got a building with 1,200 people in it in Holbrook, Long Island, and they evacuated the building for the next couple of hours in order to fumigate it, is not quite the right word, to ventilate the place, make sure no one's breathing the noxious fumes. Now, were they overreacting and being super conservative? I'm not sure. However, it was the recommended procedure by the safety department at that time. Let me drop. And another piece of history.
Yes, what you got, Dick? I got a comment.
Very fine, Rich. We're going to pick you up right after I give my introductories on this one. Another group of people who have got now 10 years or more of history of putting heavy use on lithium-ion rechargeable batteries are the people who fly extremely high-performance radio-controlled model airplanes. In fact, the NEAT fair, NEAT, if you Google those words, you'll find out about this major event where the 11th or the 12th annual is going to take place in the Roscoe area of New York State. It's a town nearby, but Roscoe is where we happen to stay when Chris and I go to that particular event. These guys are putting very heavy use, I'm talking about 40 amperes of drain, on the rather massive lithium-ion batteries that are in these aircraft. And sometimes they're flying aircraft with 10 horsepower of electric engines, and these things can fly at multiple hundreds of miles an hour while doing aerobatics and things that are out of sight compared to what you used to do with internal combustion type engines. Let me drop them. So that particular group of people has been using lithium ion batteries under extremely heavy usage for the last 10 years. And they have developed a set of procedures that you will use on that site. This is a 3-day event. Well, Friday, Saturday, Sunday is the main portion of the event, but the guys that are so enthusiastic will come from 10 different states to this event, to the NEAT Fair. And the major group that is doing that is C-Fly, Silent Electric Flyers of Long Island, a real good group. Anyhow, some of the procedures they've come up with is that when you're charging one of those batteries, it will be in a protective container. They make an asbestos-lined plastic bag-like thing, and most of the guys will recharge their batteries when they're inside of something that's one of these ammo cases, if you know what I mean. So you got to protect the battery during the charging just in case something goes wrong. But they do an extremely fast, high-current charge, and it's part of the reason they do that. So lithium-ion batteries, they got some real good points. And whether or not they can be left for long periods of time when fully charged or only partially charged, and the recommendations that you should never store them for long periods of time, thoroughly discharged, these are some of the things that we've heard. Let me drop them. So if you Google the word C-Fly, Silent Electric Flyers of Long Island, if you Google the word NEAT, N-E-A-T, and you'll find out the recommendations of these guys who have used these batteries for a lot longer than we hams have, under much heavier use than we hams have. And they've been in the trenches with these batteries. They've learned all the good news and the bad news. So Googling those sites, reading their literature, is going to give you a lot of information. Now, Rich, I'm guessing that quite a bit of the equipment you've used has used lithium-ion batteries. Rich just loves doing battery-operated QRP operations from mountaintops and so on, whatever. He's one of these guys that likes to fish with light line and catch a whale, if you know what I mean. So let's see your experience with these batteries, Rich. K2, all of a sudden I've forgotten your call letter. UPS, K2 UPS. Start off telling us where you are and what direction you're traveling. K2 UPS mobile, and then tell us the information, Rich. Looking forward to it. K2 UPS, K2 IW, and the Tech Man.
Okay, good evening. KTUPS Mobile. And I'm eastbound heading back to New York, and I'm in the vicinity of Wheeling, West Virginia right now. I've had HTs for at least 5 or 6 years that have lithium-ion batteries in them. I also have separate hobby type, the type of battery that you would put in a model plane or a model car or something that are lithium-ion. The ones that come with the HTs have pretty good life. The discharge curve is pretty flat, so you get pretty good power output right up to the point where they cut off, and the cells in the packs on the HTs, like you said, they will cut off at a certain voltage, which is extremely important because you do not want to discharge a lithium-ion battery below a certain point, or it's very, very dangerous to the battery. You can reverse it, and you're basically going to kill it. If you're going to be storing it, they like to be stored about half charged, not full charged, not empty. And it's extremely important to use the proper charger for it, especially if the battery pack has more than one cell in it. Your balancing type charger, not just any charger. Don't try to use a NiCad or zinc metal hydride or a lead acid battery charger on it. If it's a charger that came with your HT and your HT came with the lithium-ion battery, you're good. But if your HT has the capability, say it came with a NiCad, and now they've come out with a lithium-ion battery pack for it, you want to make sure that you get the correct charger, bad things can happen there. But as far as power, this place is like Hobby King. It's an online place where you can get these like 5-amp-hour lithium-ion packs that are about 14.3 or so volts, which is more than enough to power most 12-volt radios. And it's extremely lightweight, about the size of a stick of butter, and they have something called B cells, which are kind of like seconds. They may not have the life, but you can pick a 5-amp-hour lithium-ion battery up for about $15-$17 from a place like that. And the life is good. They don't really have a memory, and they're very lightweight, very powerful. Dick, back to you.
Yeah, Rich brought up a couple of very good points here. In the very early days of nickel cadmium batteries, they did have a memory characteristic where if 10 times in a row you discharge them to one half and that didn't go all the way down and then recharge them, the next time you needed the battery for a full discharge, if you go to the one half point and then die, that was the memory effect. And the later chemistry they put into nickel cadmium batteries, that was essentially removed. Lithium ion apparently has no memory. However, when you've got a battery pack that's got multiple cells in series, each individual lithium ion cell gives you something like 3.5 volts, 3.7 volts per cell, which is very different from the 2 volts per cell you get out of nickel cadmium, or is it 1.8 to 2 and a fraction volts you get out of gel cells, lead acid batteries, another very high energy density battery, very rarely used in ham equipment. But so if you're going to be using multiple cells of lithium ion in order to get up to the 8, 10, 12, 14 volt region that most of our handy talkies work on. Let me drop it. And charging those cells in series, somewhat similar to the problem we used to have with the multiple series cells from NiCad. If one of those cells was weaker for whatever reason, it would be the one that was going dead first during discharge, and therefore the other cells that keep cranking will reverse the voltage on that particular cell. That's just the way series circuits work. And correspondingly, when you're charging them, a weak cell may come up to full charge before all the others, and now the continuous current you're putting in beyond full charge is only sitting there creating heat, making that cell go worse. So in the case of lithium ion batteries, you want to try very hard to keep them all balanced. And the way they do that, under these very heavy use situations for electrically controlled, radio controlled model airplanes and boats and cars, the battery pack, you'll notice, has a bunch of extra wires to it. And the recommended charger literally uses all those extra wires that go to each individual cell. And the charger will look at the voltage on each individual cell and make sure that they are being balanced. I mean, the charger's got enough smarts in it that as you come up to full charge on, let's assume you had 4 cells in series, and if 3 of the cells came up to full charge and one of them is only partially charged. And by the way, Eric, I'm hearing you tapping on the equipment. That sounds good. The charger will yeah, I hear your voice as you shout into it, Eric, go ahead and say something to us. Okay, can't quite hear what you're saying, but I hear you shouting, and I know that the microphonics of the system right at the repeater site, as he shouts or taps into it, we hear it as he's doing his repairs and improvements. What I'm getting at is that the smart charger recognizes the fact that one of the cells is either slow or fast on its charge, and it makes balancing movements accordingly. In other words, it does whatever's required to make sure that each of the cells come up to full charge, and you got to do that with extra wiring. I'm not sure that the lithium-ion batteries that we're using with our Luxons and Alfongs, they've got 4 separate contacts in the back, so it looks to me like they've got the capability of doing that. And as Rich was saying, make sure you use the recommended charger for that exact battery pack. And I recently received a number of variations of the Baofeng radios. I noticed that each one of them, in general, has a slightly different battery and a slightly different charger, but they're all lithium ion. So let's see if Rich has anything further he wants to add, and if anyone else has experience, good or bad, with lithium ion batteries, give us your call letters right now. KTUPS with a little bit of delay. K2LIW in the TechNet.
WS2N.
Paul recognized. Okay. We're going to go to Rich first and then Paul in that order. KTUPS, if you have anything else you want to add, and please do, Rich. UPS Mobile, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Okay, this is KTUPS Mobile. The 2 points of concern that you have to be careful of with them. One is they're a little fragile. The ones that are radio, you don't have to worry about bending so much, but we've all heard and seen the news stories where, like, the guy puts his cell phone in his pocket, bends over, and the cell phone case bent a little bit, punctured the case, and caused all sorts of grief for him. and the packs that are used for radio controlled models are not necessarily in a hard plastic case like a battery pack on a radio would be. A lot of times they're just in shrink wrap, so it would be possible to puncture them. You'd have to be real careful about that, you know, maybe give it a little bit more protection. The other thing is they can discharge extremely rapidly if you short them out. You've got to be darn sure that you don't do that. They will unload the full capacity in a very short period of time with some pretty impressive results if you're not careful. Now, I did have one battery pack on a Yaesu VX8 that I dropped the radio maybe about a distance of a foot and a half, 2 feet, and it hit a wooden table, and something inside the battery pack separated or broke, and it no longer produced current. Being careful enough of them, I'm not one to open it up and try to go in there and see if there's a little wire that snaps maybe on the circuit board that controls the charging. I just put it off on the side, and I ordered a new battery for it. But just treat them carefully, and you should be all right. I think that's it.
Rich has brought up an extremely good point, and that is we amateurs are smarter than the people who use cell phones. If you're going to be doing something like acting as a radio communication person at a New York City marathon, and you're one of the guys on the somewhere along the course with a handy talkie in your hand reporting on what's going on and who dropped out of the race and things like that, giving information back and forth, you make sure you have a couple of extra batteries in your pocket so that your handy talkie's not going to go dead on you. Be awful careful in the case of a lithium ion. If you've got a couple of batteries in your pocket and you've got change in that pocket and some of that metal of the coins goes across those contacts of the lithium ion battery and creates a dead short, oh boy, you've got something that's close to a bomb in your pocket. It's going to be under extremely heavy discharge. If the internal protection circuit wasn't healthy enough in its protection, and if lithium ion cells are being rapidly discharged, you're going to get smoke and flames and heat and maybe outgassing and whatever. And so there could be an awful lot of grief in your pocket, so worry about that. Any puncturing of a lithium ion battery is potentially pretty dangerous because the process of puncturing with a sharp object, let me drop it, can go across the individual layers inside the battery. The battery is, in some cases, rolled up like a film capacitor, and so you get plus and minus plates right alongside of each other with a separator, and a sharp object that pierces the battery can easily go through multiple layers of that battery and create a short circuit between those layers. And so be very wary about any physical damage from the outside that can happen to that battery. Let's see, Paul, I wonder how many times you've used lithium-ion batteries, and what's the good news and bad news that you've seen? WS2N, our SpaceNet person, K2LIW, you got it, Paul.
Yeah, Dick, none of my ham equipment has it. Maybe it was a little button cell from years ago, and they might even be mercury, I don't know. But the cell phones and the tablets, they have the lithium, no problem. It seems like countless recharges. I've never had to change one on a cell phone. That's probably about 70 years old now. And I just want to bring up that on CBS Radio, they made an announcement that this guy, professor, working on a new type of lithium based on aluminum in Stanford. And he was showing the, this is radio, so you can't see anything, but they said he showed the people that were, he says everybody worries about these lithium things exploding if you put a hole through them. So as he had it on, he drilled a hole right through this battery. So it's supposed to be working good. You can recharge it like in a minute instead of hours. He's claiming it's a new development. Right now, they're on the large side, so you're not going to see them anytime soon. Maybe a couple of years to be able to shrink them. But based on an aluminum process, Dick, so there you go. They might change things. You don't have to worry about fires or anything with these things when you puncture them. Back to you, Dick.
Don, good information, Paul. So, lithium aluminum, it's a new one on me, and it sounds like it's got some very good characteristics. Also, because lithium is such an active element is capable of such high energy density as a rechargeable battery. There's multiple kinds of chemistry people have been experimenting with. A few of the high-tech guys flying radio-controlled, electrically powered model airplanes have also been experimenting with lithium iron. So there's a lithium iron kind of battery, which shows an awful lot of promise. Not at all popular yet, but one of my buddies that I meet at the NEAT Fair, who is a professor at Ohio University, has been telling me about that one. So we're going to be seeing quite a few different kinds of chemistry with lithium. Guarantee that graphite reinforced materials, in other words, nanotube, or whatever you're going to call it, materials where you can now get a very strong, very highly conductive plates with very large amounts of area to it. This is the method of making supercapacitors. You're going to be seeing super batteries with those, is a prediction I'm making. So I guarantee we haven't heard the end of the story yet when it comes to lithium batteries. There's going to be lots of variations, and it looks to me like they've got a lot of promise. So it's good that we amateurs who try to be on the cutting edge of electronics, particularly wireless electronics, keep our ear to the ground on this one, because I guarantee you haven't heard the end of the story yet. Let's see if there's anyone else with any other experience or information on lithium ion batteries and that whole family. Give us your call letters right now, K2LIW at the TechNet.
This is. Kilo Golf 5, Foxtrot Lima Alpha, Fred from El Paso, Texas, via IRLP.
Very fine, Fred. Glad I listened long enough so you had a chance to sign in. I should also mention that John is doing, KC2WGB, is he's opened up the website for Echolink, and anybody on Echolink, and maybe even IRLP, can send him messages, KC2WGB, John, and he keeps track of who's there and who's signing in with some further information. So, Fred, please repeat your call with us once more. I know it's blank 5, Foxtrot Lima Alpha. I missed the beginning. It's my fault. So please repeat that, Fred.
So when you're finished with that pickup bridge, KC2WGB.
This is DPZ is here with quickie answers.
Okay. And we've already mentioned how. So Fred, go ahead with your information, and I'll be picking up Rich again.
I was just wanting to add a little bit more to the previous comment. Actually, the batteries, I read the article this week, are aluminum ion batteries that are being developed at Stanford. They are very interesting technology. It's aluminum in the anode with graphite in the cathode and some type of a salt-based liquid catalyst. And they do have some very interesting characteristics that, you know, they can be charged 8 or 9 times as many times without any loss in capacity as a lithium ion. I think they were the particular ones they have now. They had recharged, completely recharged and discharged 7,500 cycles with no loss in capacity. Also, as the previous gentleman stated, they can be recharged in about 1 minute and are completely inert when it comes to drilling or damage or any other type of issues. They can be bent and reshaped. Very interesting. And the problem they're having right now, I think, per the article I read anyway, was that they're running about 2 volts, and they said for them to be useful, they'd like to get them to about 4 volts. So they said there's still some more development, but sounds very, very promising for some point in the future. 73KG5 FLA.
I was waiting for the beep, but I guess when somebody comes in by Echolink, we don't have. Fred. Fred Carpenter, that is, from El Paso, Texas. Awful glad you checked in. And so, this is a DXQSO there, Fred, and thank you for that information. But, you know, we also have some further comments. It's going to be by John. Now, here we go. Rich, K2 Uniform Papa Sierra, mobile. K2LIW. Go ahead, Rich.
Hey, Dick, there's actually 2 websites I can recommend. One is called batteryuniversity.com. No, 1 word, batteryuniversity. And at .com, it's got information on all different types of batteries, some that I hadn't even heard of before. you know, what they are, how they work, what the benefits are, how to charge them properly, all sorts of stuff. And there's another website called PowerStream, PowerStream.com. Now, they sell battery chargers, but there is also a lot of very good information on their website as well as the different chemical makeups of the different batteries and you know, what type of life they have, comparisons, and what type of charger you need. Back to that.
Thank you for that information, Rich. So, batteryuniversity.com and batterystream.com. Lots of more information. And the modern public just can't get enough wireless hardware. We want everything to be wireless. And the
hey,
who is that?
It's me. Could you do me a favor and go over to 375 and tell me what you hear?
Okay, while I'm talking right now, I'm listening to 375. I hear my voice coming out of 375 very muffled. In other words, there's no portion of my voice above 800 hertz coming out of that repeater right now. KE2EJ, KQRIW is doing the repairs on our repeater. Go right ahead, Eric.
All right, thanks. I gotta make sure that the emphasis is in the right place. I will bug you again later.
That's okay, Eric. I'm checking on it right now, yeah. As I listen carefully with the earphones to the 375 output from me right now, I'm going to do another experiment also. That is, my audio has nothing beyond 800 hertz. Let's see what happens if I go into 375 directly.
Hello, 1234. Okay, so it's the link.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, so when I go in 375, 975 directly, it comes out audio. Correct. So it's only the link that's acting in this crazy way as I see it, Eric. And, okay, he's on it. So those two websites are going to help an awful lot, give us a lot more information. As I was starting to say, the American public just can't get enough wireless information. In the ideal world, we'd like our keyboard to our desktop computer to be wireless. We'd like the display to be wireless. And when it comes to handheld equipment that controls our automobile, our television set, our garage door, whatever, everything we'd like to be wireless. All of those require small, handy, reliable, portable batteries. So lots and lots of research is going on in batteries. You haven't heard the end of the story yet, as you can tell. Lots of articles every week are being written on the latest developments in the laboratories on what they're discovering with batteries and predictions as to what future batteries will be like. So too bad Dave didn't ask us a question that anybody has any enthusiasm about. I'm having some fun with Dave. You've asked a darn good question, Dave. And 2APG, the microwave voice of Massapequa, Long Island, K2LAW. You got it, Dave.
2APG, I bet you say that to all the guys. All the hams. But, okay, Dick, very good. Yeah, I've done a lot of reading online, and, you know, all that information is wonderful. You get all sorts of comments and things like that. But, again, I really would like to hear from somebody that has personal experience, hands-on experience for a number of years with possibly handy talkies, you know, that are used on a daily basis. They're used for 8 or 10 hours and then they're thrown back in the charger, you know, that kind of thing. Practical information, you know, from somebody that that has that kind of experience. So my email address is on my QRZ page. So if anybody wants to email me with information or something like that, that would be appreciated. And I'll be listening, and we'll continue on. And just one more comment, Dick, let me drop. I know you have a number of anti-talkies that you have acquired, and hopefully we'll be hearing about those in the future. I also have a radio that hasn't arrived yet. It's a second-hand, a used Baofeng that I purchased, and apparently the radio is about a year old, and the seller has stated that the battery is going to need replacement because it, quote-unquote, doesn't hold a charge anymore. And that kind of got me thinking a little bit that, well, if it's a year old, you know, that sounds a little unusual, that it wouldn't hold a charge anymore. So when I get my hands on it and have some experience with it, I can report back a little bit more on that. But I find that to be a little unusual. You know, if a battery's a year old, you would think that it would still be functioning okay. So we'll see. More to follow. N2APG, back to that. Thanks, Dick.
These Balfon radios give you so darn much performance for the dollar. I mean, they're the $35 category, delivered in some cases, and they work on 2 meters and 450 simultaneously, and cover even some of the commercial frequencies. We're getting a lot for our money. And so if occasionally you get a bad rubber duck antenna on one of those, I did. On occasion you get a bad battery, it's very acceptable. So for a battery to not hold charge after such a brief period of time, I'm guessing that the battery itself needs replacement. And what my son and I have done, KB2IQN, is we bought extra batteries for all of our handy talkies. Also, when I went to the Amazon...
Dick?
Go right ahead, Eric.
Are you on frequency?
Without a doubt. According to my radio, let me double check. Oh, yes, I'm on the exact frequency because I'm listening to the way my voice comes out of 8.5. Sounds to me like high fidelity. When I listen to my voice coming out of 3.75, my audio volume is correct, but the audio is kind of yucky. As I said, it sounds like nothing beyond 800 hertz is coming through on 3.75, and I can tell you've made some slight changes where a little bit of the highs are coming through, but through the repeater link, there's some work required there, Eric. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
Yeah, I'm listening on RHT, and it doesn't sound great, but I'm going to try to see what it sounds like. I really should plug a pair of headphones in. Okay, keep going. I'm going to ask you to transmit on 375 in a couple minutes, but not yet.
You're now coming through the 375. When I listen to 375 output directly, my voice is quite good. When I listen to the link from east to west, my voice is low in volume, but medium good in quality.
When I listen to my voice out of the eastern machine, here we go, the western machine, I'm hearing high fidelity, it says here. the link from west to east is getting slightly better. It is intelligible, but not pleasant to listen to, so something funny is going on there. Alrighty. Any last comments on the subject of batteries before we leave it? Even Hal may have some experience, K60PZ. Anybody with any further lithium-ion battery experience, give us your call letters right now, K2IW in the TechNet.
Good comment for Eric, Dick.
Go right ahead, John.
KC2WGB. Eric, by the way, I don't know what you did, but all of a sudden, I heard that frequency full scale. I don't know whether power went up or what happened, but then it dropped out. That's when Dick was transmitting, just to let you know. KC2WGB, back to you, Dick.
Beep, just popping in if I get in.
Somebody said, can he get in? And you certainly can. Give us your call letters and your name, sir. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay there, gentlemen. Victor Alpha 3, Papa Romeo Sierra, BA3, PRS, way up here in Ontario, Canada. I heard that TechNet, I thought the TechNet was on Friday, unless I got a different TechNet. Could you, gentlemen, would one of you gentlemen or net controller be kind enough to tell me which one this is? I'm not used to hearing the TechNet on this one, and only on Fridays here. Back to you.
Give me your callers once again. Victor Alpha 3, Papa Blank Sierra, and your name, sir?
Papa Romeo Sierra, PRS, or as my daughter says, photographer's really smart, and the person here is Peter, Papa Echo Tango Echo Romeo, and we just wait for the ProcomNet. I'd run this one instead there. I've been paying attention, and heads up, some of those Bofong had problems with the first battery packs, for $50 you can get another battery pack, no problem, and they'll be nice enough to ship it over to you free of charge.
Very fine, Peter. VA3PRS. And I don't know where you're located yet. Some of the guys who sign in from Canada quite often always run on Sunday night since 1982 up here. This is TechNet number 1551, so we've been here a long time. There are multiple TechNets. There's another one in New Jersey on Thursday, and so the idea of technical nets is slowly catching on as I see it, because a small percentage of radio amateurs that really have a scientist inside that's trying to get out want to know how their equipment works, want to know how to make it work better. And so technical nets are springing up, as long as you've got some guy locally who's willing to spend the time being a net control operator and hopefully being kind to people when they check in with sometimes crazy sounding questions and sometimes some darn good questions. So this one's been around for a long time, and a number of repeaters around the United States and in Canada. Let me drop. A number of repeaters in North America and also a few other countries will adjust their Echolink or ILP equipment such that this net among some other nets gets repeated for that period of time. And occasionally we don't wait long enough in between conversations for the machine to drop for people to out of the area to sign in. We do have our local expert named John, KC2WGB, who monitors the Echolink website, so people who are trying to get in at least they had a chance of sending him messages saying that, please let me get an edge in word-wise, if you know what I mean. So, good luck, Peter. We've been around a long time, and I'm awful glad you checked in. And yes, some of the early growing pains of some of these inexpensive handy talkies that are coming from China did have some faulty components in there, but considering the price we pay for them, I'm willing to put up with that, and I'm not even going to complain about it. I'm willing to replace those. One last call. Anyone else with any further information on lithium-ion batteries, give us your call that is right now. K2LIW in the TechNet.
KTUPS, did you have the second website I gave you wrong? It's Power Stream, not Battery Stream. It was Battery University and Power Stream. Those are the two websites.
It's a good thing you told me about that. I could tell that my handwriting was a little bit sloppy, and I used the interpretation. So powerstream.com and batteryuniversity.com. And good old Eric is tapping on those tubes. I'm hearing him doing that tapping. Alrighty. Joseph, W-E-2-R-Y-Y, what's the latest in your neighborhood? And how's the world of electronics teaching you these days, Joe? W-E-2-R-Y-Y, K-2-R-I-W in the TechNet.
Confusing. That's what your answer is. How does the train make confusing? I was trying to test some electrical components, like some capacitors and some inductors, and I was coming up with some peculiar readings on my method of testing them, especially the inductors these we call reactor chokes. And I just want to see what I'm doing wrong. It seemed like a simple process to test these things if you don't have one of these, RLC meters, which I don't have, to come up with another way of determining the inductance of a reactor. And of course, the frequency I'm using is 60 hertz, so I guess I'll take it from there.
Yeah, with a very simple circuitry, using a 6.3 volt filament transformer, for instance, you can take a 60 hertz signal, plug it in series with an unknown capacitor, and then using various kinds of load, the lightest possible load you could use, that's in series with that capacitor and the other lead from the 6.3 volt transformer, would be a modern digital voltmeter. The good news about modern digital voltmeters is very similar to the Heathkit VA3 vacuum 2 voltmeter, which was a popular Heathkit in the late 40s, early 50s. Yeah, that's when that came out. Late 40s, early 50s. I own one of those Heathkits. I own two of them. My father built it when he was taking the course from National Radio Institute. Anyhow, the good news about vacuum 2 voltmeters and modern-day digital voltmeters is most of them have an input impedance of 10 megohms. So when you put 10 megohms as a load, and it's simultaneously the load, simultaneously the AC voltage that you generate through that capacitor, through that 6.3 volt circuit. You can measure capacitance down to about 1 picofarad, and by using other resistive loads, you can measure probably an AC electrolytic capacitor to quite a few microfarads. That's a lot of decades of range. So I'm amazed how many amateurs, whenever I tell them that even if they don't have an RLC meter, a meter that's intended for measuring capacitance and reactance, let me drop. And they don't have a signal generator where they can put 50 megacycles through the component being measured. You know, they have very little test equipment, but we all have source of 110 volt 60 cycle cut down with a transformer or some other method with, say, for instance, 6.3 volts AC. You put that in series with your capacitor, and with a little bit of simple calculations of what is capacitor reactance, you can measure a huge range of capacitors. And there are similar ways you could measure inductors, although inductors is a little bit more complicated. So the 60 cycle power that we get from our, in our case, Con Edison or PSE&G or any of your local power companies, the accuracy of that sine wave is so darn good that looking at it with a digital voltmeter on the AC scale, looking at it with an oscilloscope, you can make some extremely good measurements if you know what you're doing. Each time I mention this to my fellow radio amateurs, usually their eyes glass over saying, why would I want to do that? Well, if you picked up a dog bone capacitor out of your junk box, let me drop it, and you think you're looking for 50 picofarad for this particular circuit, or 001 microfarads, and because the markings are washed off of your particular capacitor, it's been in your junk box for a long time, and you'd like to know, is it a good capacitor, and is it within the reasonable range you're looking for? And you're not willing to, in the old days, you could run down to Radio Shack and buy capacitors, resistors, and inductors. No longer. Very similar to what happened with Arrow Electronics. Some efficiency expert came along, told them, why are you stocking these components? You're not making much money out of that. And talked them into giving that up. That also happened with Lafayette Radio. So Lafayette Radio, Arrow Electronics, and now Radio Shack all gave up these inexpensive components in the back room that didn't give them much money. They weren't smart enough to realize that is the attractor that got the tinkerer into the store. And while he's in the store, he's buying other appliances. And you drop those capacitors, and you're cutting off your future. Pretty soon the store goes out of business. So back in those days when we could get those easily, it wasn't a problem. Nowadays you have to take apart your chunks of electronics and dig deeper into your junk box to find out what value of capacity you've got. And you're onto an extremely good technique here for measuring it, Joe, and I'm awful glad you brought it back up. So let's see what you've measured that was unusual. Maybe we can explain it. W2RYY, a tinkerer from way back in radio circuits, T2IW and TechNet. You got it, Joe.
Well, I wasn't using a 6.3 volt transformer for a power source. And my measurements on my couple of capacitors, unknown capacitors, seemed to work out correctly. I calculate after the right value of capacitor, but when I tried to measure the inductors, they didn't come out correctly.
Okay, what was the power supply you used, Joe? Was it 60 hertz, or maybe you used it for kind of audio or RF signal generator? Describe to me the circuit by which you tried to measure the inductors. As I said, measuring an inductor is a little bit more difficult. Let me go back for a second on capacitors. Let's assume now that you've memorized that formula in order to pass your advanced or your extra class license test, that capacitive reactance in ohms equals 1 over 2 pi FC, 1 over 2 pi, 6.28, F frequency in hertz, and C capacitance in farads. You plug those values into that formula, and you'll come up with some number of ohms. If, for instance, just to give you an example, if your very tiny capacitor at 60 hertz calculated to be a capacitive reactance of 10 megohms, and now you put your known voltage through that capacitor into your 10 megohm digital voltmeter, because the capacitor reactance and the ohmmeter and the voltmeter are equal in value. You know, you've just created a voltage divider network, and you're going to get roughly half voltage, so to speak, out of that. I'm oversimplifying it here, but as you can tell, once you know the number of ohms of the capacitor, which is now in series with your digital voltmeter, and you know the number of ohms of your digital voltmeter, or in some cases with measuring a bigger capacitor, let me drop.
Okay, high speed 75 now.
Okay, 375. Audio is considerably improved. It's still a little bit muffled, but very intelligible. Right now, the audio is going out to 1 kilohertz and falling off fairly fast, but a person will be able to understand what I'm saying. So it's not great, but it's improved, Eric. KE2EJ, the man doing the maintenance. K2RIW in the TechNet.
K2RIW, KE2EJ. I have to go over to the other end.
And I'm also going to give you a test where I transmit on the input to this Eastern machine. Stand by. KE2EJ, K2IW. Ooh, that's a huge improvement in the link from east to west. That's a good sounding link, Eric. Tiny bit of echo in there, but very, very little. A little bit of tummy sound. Very, very little. So the link from west to east, correction, from east to west, working like a charm.
Do me a favor, carry on and transmit there for a little bit.
Roger, Dodger. I'm going to keep transmitting from the eastern link through this machine. So from east to west, working like a charm. So as I was starting to say, you could put a different load resistor right across your digital voltmeter. Your digital voltmeter is 10 megohms. If you put another 10 megohm resistor, you just happen to have in parallel with it, you'd have a 5 megohm load. More likely, you're going to put a 1K resistor across your digital voltmeter, in which case you don't even have to use the parallel resistance formula. When you put a 1K resistor in series, in parallel with it, the audio went quite far down, now the audio is coming back. You put a 1K resistor in parallel with a 10 megohm resistor, your net result is very close to 1K. Audio is just a little bit low right now, Eric. But sounding quite good. It's coming up. A little bit more audio volume, I think, is required from east to west. And hello, 1234, T2RIW going into the eastern input. And that's sounding quite good. So calculating what happens when you put that capacitor into a, here we go. You put your voltage through a capacitor into your voltmeter of known impedance. Very few people even know that most digital voltmeters of high quality have a 10 megohm input impedance that give very little loading to the circuit, whereas your very famous triplet and Simpson volt ohm milliammeter, they had something like 20,000 ohms per volt. So in other words, that would give you a 60,000 ohm load on the 3-volt scale. That's a huge difference from 10 megohm input impedance. There are a number of situations where you use a triplet or a Simpson meter, and you try to measure a very high impedance voltage source, one of the highest impedance sources most of us run into these days. Let me drop.
Hey, Dick.
Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, I'm finding some reason to talk to KTUPS, because I want to just check the levels on hyperlink. It should have affected it.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to the normal input. Stand by. Right now I'm talking to the normal input, and when you wanted to find out how well Eric, here we go, Rich K2UPS is hearing me, I guess you want to hear how well he's hearing when I go directly into the eastern machine or when I go directly into the western machine. Or which is that, Eric? KE2EJ, K2RIW?
The western machine is fine. I just want to make sure that they hear it. Actually, I just dialed up on my phone. I want to hear them.
Okay, K2UPS, traveling east in the vicinity of West Virginia. We want to hear from you, Rich. And by the way, all of your previous transmissions for quite a few days, the audio when you come through the means by which you do, the audio is a little bit lower than I'd like. Good sounding audio, but the volume is a little bit lower than I'd like.